Hi, I'm Dominic Boyle, and welcome to the Asymptote Podcast. In my next two episodes, I'm going to be talking about multimodality, things that exist in multiple forms at once, like in text and film, or dance and poetry. Specifically, we're going to talk about the relationship between movement and language. But first, a word about the Asymptote Book Club. As Jan Martel said, there's a whole world of stories out there that we, in the English-speaking world, have yet to discover. The Asymptote Book Club can take you there. In the last 4 months, the book club has taken readers to a small village in northern Norway during the frozen Arctic winter, a sunlit plaza in Peron's Argentina, the dense forest of Bihar, and a Naples apartment filled with haunting memories of the past. With our fifth title, Brother in Ice by Alicia Kopf, we're setting off on a new journey, a genre-bending tale of polar exploration. Translated into English by Mara Faye Lethem and published by And Other Stories, Brother in Ice has received widespread critical acclaim. Join us on our journey and head to asymptotejournal.com/bookclub for more information. In translation, we're always struggling with creating one world with the linguistic tools of another. But this transformation of form and content can take place in other media as well, between film and music, or painting and poetry. I recently spoke with Kinchu Sabo. She's a dancer and choreographer here in Switzerland, to find out more about one form of movement which has an especially close relationship with language. It's called eurythmy.
Every letter and every word has a sound and has a way of movement. So the first thing is to go into this kind of way of experiencing language. And if you have this, then you can go to the content. So you move the language, the sound, and you, when you do your choreography, you also put this together with the content.
When you were saying and L and F, what movements were you doing with your hands?
I was doing the eurythmy.
For people who aren't familiar with eurythmy, could you maybe just tell people a little bit about it and introduce it?
And it's basically a way of movement, the way of express yourself with your body, who was developed in the early 1920s. There's a really big community of people in Germany who go to Waldorf schools, the children, and they know eurythmy. There are these jokes where they say, oh, can you dance your name? And they mean like in eurythmy you can dance for speech and you learn for every letter of movement. So they make like, oh, these are the kids who can dance their name. But I never was in contact with Waldorf schools or had no idea about this. So I saw eurythmy when I was 22, and I just was really inspired. I was really inspired because I never saw art and art expression like this before, and it really made me curious and touched me somehow, and I was, oh, this is what I wanted to do.
And what was it about it that inspired you when you first saw it?
First of all, I always danced. In my teenage years, I did a lot of hip-hop and breakdance. So I like to move. But I never liked to go to these classical things or ballet or, I don't know, I didn't find it interesting because somehow I didn't feel the connection to the natural way of movement. You know, a lot of performance artists have this, I want to stay, I'll be on a stage because I want to show myself. And with eurythmy, I didn't have this feeling. It was not about this. It was really about this being present in the movement.
So what was it like the first time that you started a eurythmy class? Your first time actually doing eurythmy?
That is a good question. I have to go back now. So yeah, it was good, so I can't really, it was really, you know, basically you learn how to walk again. So you really start, you start with your body on the ground, on the floor, like a baby, and you learn how to crawl and how you really get in touch with your feet and with your whole body.
You talked about the colors during the dance and the music. So Eurythmy isn't just about the movement, but it has other things that it's connected to.
It's a way to show different things through movement. So you can show colors through movement, you show the music in speech, you show also the language. It's about the sound of the language and the sound of the words. So you go into another direction of language. There is a way of thinking behind this that why are you doing or ah? First you could look how you move your mouth for that. And there is this way of thinking that there must be a reason why we say ah, why we say and what is happening when you do this this sound. For example, when we learn the letters they didn't tell us like, oh, this letter looks like this and this letter is like this. We explored the letters in the way that we looked on the daily life and how we move. For example, when we see somebody and we like surprised, and then we open up and like, ah, you know, and then when you connect this, it opens up more, and you also say ah. So the quality is opening up and receiving somebody. You learn for every letter to have a connection in your daily life. It's not something abstract. It's from life. It's not made up.
Can you describe what you did for F?
I want to ask you how would you describe this, like this when we just focus on the way you hear it and how you put your mouth and your tongue.
It's sort of like at the same time soft but hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like scratchy.
Mm-hmm.
But also very airy and
mm-hmm. And it goes into a direction.
Yeah.
And it wants to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like and the movement is like you I don't know how to you see it. It's like you try to do the same movement that you do with your mouth, with your body.
Like you embody the F, like the...
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And this is so interesting because for every letter, these are just qualities. Then you can basically do this with every part of your body. And you somehow look different on movement. It's just a vocabulary. And you also see this movement is not something made up. Everybody can do this. You know, it's just a movement. And you can see this movement with other dancers, but they describe it in a different way.
So when you you have a text that you choose to dance to, how do you start?
Honestly, first I improvise. This is the first thing I do. I improvise a lot. And after a while, I notice what I'm doing or where does it get me. And then I read again the text and I read it loud. And then I find out which words are for me important. And then I find a movement for the words. And, you know, because I have this background of the letters, it's so in my movement that I already do it. So I don't have to do every letter for letter. It's like more when I know there's the T and there's this quality and, oh, and in the end is the E. So I put them really fast, close together.
So in the end, it's not like letter for letter. It's about the whole flow of the text and the whole word.
Yeah.
You said that it's kind of like a joke, like these are the kids that can dance their own name. But do you actually do that? Do you dance your own name ever?
My own name? If I dance my own name...
Well, is that part of the class where you have to learn to dance?
Yeah, you do it, of course, because it's funny also. I always get this question. Even when I was in London, I had to dance the name for people there. So you do it often, quite often, yeah.
But it's something that's kind of like, okay, I'll do it, like a party trick.
Exactly, yeah.
But for Sabo, the most important thing about Eurythmy was that it gives us an ability to experience things like text or space in another way, through our body.
Just take the word and imagine it in you and then try to show it through your body. You can work on different levels. It gives you just the freedom to try things out. So Eurythmy can give you a real experience with your whole body for things that are most of the time intellectual or abstract. And this we don't have a lot in our daily life.
In my next episode, I interview translator, poet, and performer Sawako Nakayasu. We continue the conversation about language and movement when we talk about her translation of a notebook written by Japanese dancer Moe Yamamoto while he was working with choreographer Tatsumi Hijikata on his piece Costume and Foss.
That notebook existed in a moment of time during rehearsal, but in no way does it represent the final product of the dance that was performed. So it's, to me, it's really kind of a magical text that really captures an ephemeral moment in the process of making something. Hijikata talks about this too, about how you have these structures and choreographies, but the state of mind of performance is its own consciousness in itself. So at that moment, it's no longer about staying true to the precise script as it was written, but there's an overflowing energy and consciousness that arises out of the performance. So all those layers of difference and sort of the gaps between the different versions is really fascinating to me.
That's on my next episode of the Asymptote Podcast. I'm Dominic Boyle. Thanks for listening.